Alexis de Tocqueville is one of the most quoted but little understood early thinkers of American democracy. In 1831, the Frenchman traveled across the United States and later published his masterpiece, Democracy in America. While Tocqueville visited a bustling New York, an up-and-coming Detroit, and the antebellum South, it was Boston that provided him with the intellectual keys he needed to understand why America was able to survive and thrive with its decentralized, unpredictable form of democracy. Joining us now to talk a little bit more about Tocqueville in Boston is Leo Damroche. He's professor of literature at Harvard and author of the new book, Tocqueville's Discovery of America. Leo Damroche, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So Alexis de Tocqueville, he's one of the more oft-quoted students of American democracy. By the time he'd arrived in Boston, he'd already been to New York, he'd been up into Canada, I believe he'd also been to Detroit. So what was it about Boston that was immediately different?
Well, what was different was what made it familiar to him. He was an aristocrat. His family were very conservative to the end of their days. They wanted the monarchy brought back. He was considered something of a rebel for his belief that democracy was the future. In Boston, he suddenly found himself entertained by people like the ones he knew best at home, what Oliver Wendell Holmes later called the Brahmins.
And his traveling companion, Gustave de Beaumont, he had a fascinating observation about Boston almost as soon as they got here. Beaumont wrote regarding, you know, these upper-class Bostonians, it's curious how this aristocracy finds itself thrown in as if by chance into the midst of a republican society founded on the principle of absolute equality, within which it forms a strange anomaly. So there was already that tension between sort of classes and people here in Boston that they felt very immediately.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think one thing he came to understand was equality really was a principle, even if it wasn't a literal fact. That is, in France, you were born into a social station. You were very unlikely to change. In America, most people were poor and some people were rich, but the poor always knew that they might become rich. There were no built-in obstacles to changing their lives. Mm-hmm. And I think he felt, from the other point of view, that the patricians were not aristocrats. It wasn't a hereditary privilege. They felt they had earned it by their achievements or those of their ancestors. And I think it was willingly that they accepted that they were thrown into a democratic country.
I suppose in that case, it's not so ironic, even though it struck me when I first read it as possibly being ironic, that it was from these very Bostonian Brahmins that Tocqueville actually got some pretty important insights into American democracy and that idea of social mobility and cultural cohesion here. So who exactly did he spend time with when he was here, and what did he learn from them?
He sought out, for example, Josiah Quincy, who had been mayor of Boston and a very successful one. And Quincy gave him some very interesting ideas about how the colonies had been virtually self-governing for a couple of centuries before the Revolution. It took a month and a half for a ship to get from England to America. They weren't going to micromanage the colonies from London. And really, that what they did was break with the king, but go on governing not just the larger state of Massachusetts, but the townships in the way they always had.
So there's another very influential person that Tocqueville met while in Boston, and that's Josiah Sparks. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
He was a biographer of George Washington. He was a very thoughtful analyst of American politics, and it was he that gave Tocqueville the phrase, the tyranny of the majority. Mm. But it's quite interesting that when Tocqueville's great book came out, Sparks was offended and said, all I meant by it was the majority in the legislature might be unfair to the minority, but that can always change at the next election, and Tocqueville's treating it as public opinion. But in fact, the more important insight was pretty much you have to join the majority or be ostracized by it. And so he thought, whereas in France, all kinds of wild ideas were bandied around, even if you could never get them into practice. In America, which was in principle much more free, there was a kind of herd instinct. If you didn't go along with what everybody else was saying, they might really shun you.
But at the same time, Sparks introduced to Tocqueville this idea that Massachusetts was kind of the center of a particular reason why American democracy worked, and that is that it had a long history, even by the 1830s, of being a place where strong centralization didn't work. And the reason why democracy worked is because we had localization. So let's listen to a reading of a little bit of what Sparks had to say about that.
Interests, passions, duties, and rights gathered around the separate townships, and within them prevailed a genuine, active political life that was altogether democratic and republican. the colony still recognized the supremacy of the home country and monarchy was the law of the state, but the republic was already fully alive in the townships.
There's a third very important person in terms of Tocqueville's thinking about America that he met while in Boston, and that is a man named Francis Lieber, who was originally born in Germany, but after fighting in various European wars, he finds himself in the United States beginning around 1827. So tell us a little bit more about the role that Francis Lieber plays here.
Lieber is a very colorful character. When he was 16, he had fought in the Battle of Waterloo and was shot through the neck and chest, got back to Germany and was thrown into jail as a political radical. When he finally got out of Germany and came to America, he had already done a lot of living and thinking. And he was a very astute student of American culture, ended up a well-known political scientist. And the chief idea that he gave to Tocqueville was, gave rise to Tocqueville's expression, habits of the heart, that what holds a democracy together is not its legal system or its constitution simply as a document. It's the shared belief of a people. Democracy is a state of mind. Tocqueville came to see that that was the clue to why this peculiar, disorganized system was succeeding so well.
Mm-hmm. And that seems to be, like you said, the clue or the key to really understanding this cacophonous form of democracy that we had and still have in the United States. So what was it, do you think, about Boston at the time that allowed these minds to be there at the same time to sort of interface with Tocqueville and help him understand more about what was going on in terms of the American mental attitude?
Well, I think Boston rightly prided itself on being the cradle of the Revolution. John Quincy Adams' father was one of the founding fathers. However patrician they may have seemed in some respects, they really felt they had fought for a kind of freedom that they believed in. And at the same time, they felt connected with a classical tradition of civic duty, which Tocqueville totally sympathized with. What he less understood was the wave of populism that had brought Andrew Jackson to the White House, and partly because these folks kind of prejudiced him against Jackson. Tocqueville never really appreciated that man's greatness.
They were the ones who were disinherited by that populism
exactly.
That Jackson brought along with him. But that also leads me to a really interesting section on Boston, and that is, well, Tocqueville, in meeting with Adams, meeting with Josiah Sparks, meeting with Lieber, and all the more patrician elements of Boston, he got this intellectual exercise, intellectual insight into what democracy is all about. But at the same time, he didn't really actually end up being a champion of those ideas. He thought that the true future of America was a different sort of person that he encountered in other parts of the nation, you know, in the expanding West, for example.
Yeah, in fact, I can give you a perfect example, which amused me to notice. He meets a 23-year-old lawyer in Cincinnati who has only recently arrived from New Hampshire and is rather cynical about the populist style of elections there. He said they constantly elect terrible people because they have to get drunk with the voters in order to win their votes. In fact, Tocqueville says with some disapproval, out west they've recently elected a man named David Crockett who can't even read. But at the same time, this lawyer said he thought at the national level perhaps things are more hopeful. In fact, his name was Salmon P. Chase. He later became senator from Ohio, governor of Ohio, Lincoln's Secretary of the Treasury, and ended up Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
Tocqueville obviously falls in love with both the romantic notions of the United States, of America, but also with the intellectual puzzle that it presents in terms of why is it that this form of chaotic democracy that he saw all around him works here? And that was the driving question he had arriving in Boston, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. But, you know, the Democracy in America wasn't written at once. He had years of further research and reflection and talking to people. And by the time he finished that book, he'd begun to think that he'd seen a temporary state of America and that the country was bound, as it became larger and more powerful, to become more centralized and to have something much more like the government we know today.
Given those changes, still at that time in the 1830s when Tocqueville was here, was Boston really critical to his understanding of what he was seeing around the rest of the country?
Each section that he visited was in its own way critical, but what Boston showed him was the tradition of political thought and political leadership that was crucial to making the nation what it was.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to Tocqueville in Boston, maybe a difficult question and impossible to answer, but what do you think he would make of what we have here in the city today?
It's a good question. He would at least recognize Boston. It hasn't changed as much to the eye as most of the places he visited. He couldn't have possibly anticipated even the great wave of Irish immigration. It was barely beginning in his day, let alone the other ethnic groups that have arrived since then. I think it might feel more familiar to him than modern New York would, which in his day, he said, is a boring skyline only one story high. And let alone if he went back to Detroit, where a journalist there not long ago wrote about his Tocqueville's trip and said this lovely stream along which he camped is now a foul cesspool and, you know, the entire thing is surrounded with concrete. No, I think he would still recognize Boston.
Well, that's Leo Damrosch. He's author of Tocqueville's Discovery of America. Leo Damrosch, thank you so much for being with us at Radio Boston.
Thank you very much, Meghna.